Thank you so much, Claire, and thank you so much for inviting me. It's great to be here. Any opportunity that I have to talk about OA, I am all on board, because there's nothing that has changed my life more than OA. But I'm going to go back a little bit farther, like way, way back. I was born in South Georgia, in the town I live in now, although I've been other places. And I was born into a very dysfunctional family. My father was an alcoholic, but he was a happy alcoholic. He wasn't a mean, violent alcoholic. My mother didn't touch the stuff, quite miserable. Her goal in life was to change him, didn't work. And so, of course, since she was miserable, she decided, well, I can't change him, so I'll make everybody else miserable. And so it wasn't the greatest childhood. I was very torn between my love for my dad and my fear of my mother. I knew from the very beginning that something was wrong. I always knew that there was something wrong with me. I didn't feel loved. I didn't feel like much of anything. We had great food. I mean, my mother was the best cook, but there was always something with flour, fried, something starchy, lots of cheese, just your traditional gravy, traditional ways of eating in the South, and I knew it no better. We would have a lot of family gatherings and get together, and there was always food in the family gatherings. And then since the grown-ups usually drank, the kids were kind of left to their own devices. So I grew up around my cousins, and we would have a good time, but I seemed to always be, unable to play the way that they did. I was real needy and bossy, and I wanted everything my way. And so this one particular time, we were at a relative's house having a cookout, and my older cousin said, and I was never really like asked to participate in a lot of the games and stuff. And so he told me, he said, let's play a game. Let's play hide and seek, and we'll get everybody to find us. And I was so excited at being included that I just went along. This is going to be great. Everybody's going to like me, and it's going to be fun. Well, we didn't really play hide and seek. That was the first of many times that I was molested by my cousin. And the shame and guilt and not being able to understand what happened, but knowing that if I told anybody, I would be in trouble. I would get a spanking, or it would be all my fault. And so I kept it to myself. What that led me to was probably a life of overindulgence for food. Food didn't hurt me. Food loved me. Food would never hurt me. I would always be the first one at the table. And then plus, you know, everybody was happy and carefree at the meal. And so I'd be the first one at the table. I would just load my plate up if I was allowed. You know, all the fixings, everything that was just terrible for you. And I would eat until I was about stuffed. This went on for several years. I just loved food. I reached a point. Now, I didn't really gain a lot of weight. I wasn't a small child, but I wasn't a heavy child, because I was very active and I played sports and just kept myself sort of real busy. Like I said, this whole time I'm knowing something's not right. Something doesn't feel right in my mind. I didn't know if it was the guilt from what was going on behind the scenes, you know, not feeling loved, all the arguments at home. Well, now I understand that I had a mental illness. Back then, I had no clue, no idea. My life went on. I just tolerated. I just existed. I did not live. I lived for food. When I was growing up, I mean, I can remember the first McDonald's, the first Burger King in my town. And boy, when those things came along, it was like heaven on earth. I got a job at the McDonald's, and life opened all kinds of doors. I could eat there. I could eat at home. Just eat, eat, eat. And then that was in the 60s. Now, I started putting on a little bit of weight, and I was tired because I was working and going to school and not sleeping well because of just a lot of different things. And so a friend of mine told me about diet pills, and we had a local doctor, and I went to the local doctor, and I got, it was nothing but speed. I mean, that's all it was. And so I started taking diet pills, kept my weight down, but you talk about diet pills on top of being bipolar, that's a combination that is just terrified. It's a wonder that I did not end up in a padded room, literally. I did this for so many years, hating my life. I had ended up being fairly promiscuous because of what had went on. And I just wanted somebody to love me. I wanted to get that attention and that love that I felt like would only make me a real person, would only complete me. And so at 17, I met someone, and a couple of months later, we convinced my parents to let me get married. And so I got married as a senior, and everything seemed to be fine. I didn't love that man. That was so sad. But I wanted to get out of my house. We moved up north. And because it was my first sign of independence, you talk about a free-for-all with food. I could eat anytime I wanted to. I could eat anything I wanted to. But I didn't have the diet pills then. And so I started gaining weight. And when I came home after the summer, the first time my family saw me after about 6 months, I had gained about 70 pounds, and my mother had a fit. I mean, she shamed me. She criticized me. It was horrible. But I just got angry because I just thought, well, I know what I'm doing. I'm grown. I'm away from y'all. You can't do nothing to me. You can't hurt me anymore. And so I never thought that food loved me. You're not going to take that away from me. It's the only thing that loved me. I was in a loveless marriage. I didn't want to be where I was at. I wanted to be free. I wanted my mind to be okay. And unfortunately, what I was doing was never going to do that. So I stayed married for a short while. We traveled, went to Germany. I had one child, came back, decided I can't do this anymore. And so I divorced him, and I lived with my parents a little bit of the time. I never was really able to be independent. And I'm telling you, if it didn't crawl away from me, it went in my mouth because I love to eat. And I kept the weight on, kept the weight on. Two more marriages, one more child. And I had finally, after that third marriage, I decided, well, I'm just going to try to do something a little bit different. And I was able to go to school and become a respiratory therapist.
10 minutes.
I was heavy into drugs at that time and continuing the diet pills, the cocaine, the marijuana, all these things, and the food. I was cooking and eating as hard as I could because that was the only thing that loved me. Fast forward, I continued to work in my profession, and I ate until I weighed 360 pounds. I couldn't believe it. I don't know how I was able to work. I would be called to an emergency, and by the time I got there, sweat would be pouring off of me, and I would have to sit down and so I could catch my breath before I could deal with the emergency. It's a miracle I kept a job. But I tell you what, I'd get my daughter up in the middle of the night and send her out for food for me to eat, because I was going to eat, and I ate all the time. I was fortunate enough to find out about gastric bypass, and I was successful in getting my insurance to pay for it and meeting qualifications and having the surgery. I was really full of myself then. I mean, I was going to lose all kinds of weight. I was going to be happy. That's what I was going to be, was happy. I lost 200 pounds, but I wasn't happy. And eventually, I picked up those same habits. As soon as my stomach would allow me, I started back drinking the carbonated drinks, eating the fried foods. I'd learned nothing, nothing at all. I went on and on and on. My daughters were grown. My youngest daughter, well, had grandchildren. I continued to work in my field. I wasn't as big as 360. Like I said, I did lose 200 pounds. And then I'd start gaining and losing the same 100 over and over again. I got to a point that my daughter died. And when she died in December, she had two young sons. And when she died, it was like, what am I going to do? I don't even know the feeling that you have when that happens to you. And, or how to describe it rather. And so I took on a new responsibility, and then COVID happened, and I ate my way through COVID. And I got to a point where I was sitting in my chair, asking one of them to bring me food, ordering what they would bring to the house, ordering takeout. Since you could go to the grocery store and buy food, I kept food in the house. Gang, and miserable. I cannot describe to you how miserable I was. Trying every single kind of diet. I didn't care how much it cost, what I had to do. I did it for about a week or two, and then or a month, and it didn't give me the results. And so I'm like, well, bum this. I'll just try something else. And I ran into a friend one day, and I was totally defeated. My life was over. I was going to sit in that chair and die. And she told me about OA. And I thought, okay, well, I'll try it. I went to an OA meeting. I messaged her and asked her if she would be my sponsor. And she sent me a list of the foods I can eat, of the diet I will be on. And we can go from there. Well, she kind of giggled a little bit. And she said, that's not what it's about. And I was so skeptical when she started talking to me about steps and the allergies and the phenomena, the cravings and compulsive eating. And I thought, well, this sounds like a bunch of hooey to me. It's never going to work, but I'm here. I enjoyed the social part because it was COVID of the meetings. And so I continued to keep coming to the meetings. And then I don't know what happened. I was reading I didn't know what happened. I had that spiritual awakening. I realized that this was not emotional eating. This was a disease. This was an illness that I had to take a hold of, take charge of, and get on the path to recovery. I could not live, and I have a lot to live for, a lot. I don't have time to sit around and whine and complain about what's happened and what I need to do and what I can't do. I've got to push forward with what I can. And so I really started going to a lot of meetings. I started taking the steps. Abstinence was really easy at first. Boy, I zoomed around on that pink cloud like you would not believe. And then all of a sudden, bam, I hit a brick wall. I got COVID. It just, everything just, my life just fell apart. And I started back eating. I forgot about abstinence, but I kept coming to the meetings. I never gave up coming to the meetings. Once the COVID was over, I never really gained any weight during that time. I had taken off about 40 pounds. I didn't gain any weight. But I also was not progressing. I wasn't doing what I really need to do to be successful and to recover from this disease. This is not playtime. This is real. This can kill you. I started getting really serious after the relapse, and it took me a while. It was not easy. I just cannot even tell you the network of friends and OA family and those that, I mean, I just cherish and love them more than I could ever say, that have worked with me and listened to me and helped me and talked to me and been there for me more than I would have ever dreamed of in my life. And so I have decided, I said, well, I've got to do this. I've got to, you know, this is ridiculous. Quit playing around. You either believe it or you don't believe it. You either do it or you don't do it. It's as simple as that. I mean, it's hard. We were told it will be painstaking, and that was not a joke. Unfortunately, it was a very serious thing. And so I knew it was going to hurt. I knew there were going to be times that I would be just outraged because I had to be involved in something that didn't allow me to eat what I wanted to, because my notion was, okay, I'm going to pray to God and ask him to let me eat what I want and take all calories away and take all carbohydrates and starches and let everything be free of calories so I can have what I want. And I would adjust the program, my program, according to what made me happy. It didn't matter what the program and the proven methods were. I was going to do the steps I wanted. I was going to be abstinent the way I wanted it to be. Well, guess what? It does not work. It does not work. There's a proven reason that this program is laid out how it is. Let me tell you, I have a much stronger faith in my higher power, who is God. And turning everything over to him was quite a challenge, because I have to tell you, I could control the world better than him. Or so I thought. Turning my life over to him and what he wants for me. Doing the steps. Like I said, not just the steps that you want to do, all of them. Every part of them.
1 minute left.
Thank you, Cheryl. Oh, I can't believe I went longer than I thought. And then the tools. Now, the tools are the banister that helps us walk through those steps. So we have to utilize them. That's what they're there for. There's nothing that I love more than outreach. You see my phone number here? When I put that phone number up for a reason, because I love this program. I love OA, and I want to reach out. I want people to call me. I want to be and do for them what has been done for me. I'm so, so grateful I've had this opportunity to share with you today. There is hope. There is hope in what we're doing. We are on this journey together. We might get tripped up along this pathway. Get up and get going. The detours don't last long unless we let them. And I want to say I love you, and I'm so grateful to be here, and I'm so grateful that you're a part of my OA family. And with that, I pass.